Where Nobody Knows Your Name is not filmed in front of a live studio audience. Hello and welcome back. It's a fun episode. I'm James.
And I'm John.
This is season 10, episode 8. Where have all the floorboards gone? Where have they gone, John?
I don't know, James. We'll find out, maybe.
I hope so. I think when you're posing a question as the title, you have to give an answer. Yes. It's named after the 1960s protest song, Where Have All the Flowers Gone?, written by Pete Seeger and Joe Hickerson.
Add it to the playlist?
Probably. It aired on the 7th of November, 1991. It was written by Ken Levine and David Isaacs. And it's interesting that they're the writers of this episode. And directed by James Burrows.
Yeah, you say interesting. They wrote the last episode as well, Bar Wars V, The Final Judgment. So coming off the back of a strong episode. And I'm excited to see they're writing this one again. Because I think, as we discussed last week, they know the characters so well.
They do. And one of the characters that they're writing again is Kevin McHale.
Who's back in Cheers.
Yeah.
I didn't think we'd see him again. He'd stopped by last season. And I'm going to say it now anyway. After watching this episode, James, I realised that Kevin McHale is basically sort of a pre-Always Sunny in Philadelphia rickety cricket.
In terms of the gang is destroying his character.
Like it feels like he's consistently getting damaged and injured each episode.
Yes, exactly.
And I'm scared if he comes back, James.
Well, in the last episode, he faked an injury, didn't he?
No, in the last episode, they broke his arm.
Oh.
They're playing basketball, and I feel like Woody tripped him over or something.
Well, poor Kevin McHale. Poor giant Kevin McHale.
Well, we'll get into the full sort of details of his injuries later in this episode, but I kicked off with that. Thought it'd come up later, but we hit it early.
Cold open, is it?
Lovely cold open. Yeah. Takes place outside. Cheers, James.
Yeah, Fraser's trying to park.
Yeah, he's pulled up outside. He's a fancy man. He's got a little electric lock. Does the beep beep. And as he's walking away, his car alarm keeps going off and he keeps having to sort of lock it back up, make sure it's all right. It keeps happening again and again and again.
Yeah.
That's a Christine car, I tell you.
I tell you that car is haunted. No, it's just mischief, isn't it? It's just Norm and Cliff causing mischief.
Yeah, they're hid behind the car and Norm's got a beer on the road.
Yeah, dangerous.
But they're crouched behind the door and just slowly open the handle every now and then when they know Fraser's walking away so he has to come back.
I tell you what, it's a busy street though, that hill. So people would be driving and just see these two guys sitting, as you say, on the road, repeatedly laughing at a car with beer in hand and... It's got a wino vibe, doesn't it? You know, those guys, bottle of wine in a brown paper bag.
Yeah. Oh, well, I enjoyed it. Fun opening, but it was a very quick one. More visual gag than anything else, I guess.
Yes, very much so. It's like the We Will Rock You cold open. Very little dialogue.
But it means we've got a lot of time for the main episode, which we'll move into.
First thing that happens in this episode is it's Woody and Kelly's third anniversary of going steady, is how Woody puts it.
Yeah, Woody's celebrating, and he tries to talk to Fraser, and he says to Fraser, like, they got each other gifts. He got Kelly, like, a little, was it a cheap little ring kind of idea?
A keychain.
Yeah. But she got him a very fancy camera.
$300 dues.
Yeah. And Fraser goes, oh, you know what, Woody, don't worry about it. In these kind of relationships where Kelly's clearly got vast more amounts of wealth than you. It's, you know, it's a good thing that you've even made it to 3 years kind of thing. And all Woody wanted to ask about was how to set the automatic flash. And then it's quite sort of sad. For a psychologist, Fraser doesn't really know how to read a room.
He doesn't know how to read a room. And I think we've learned about Fraser over the past decades that he has a certain presumptive arrogance, doesn't he? And he often puts his foot in it by assuming people's issues. When really, he should be asking, and how does that make you feel?
Well, in this episode, he gets some issues of his own because Lilith says that she's going to have some photos done at work, a new headshot, which opens the discussion of, I think Rebecca says, oh, you're going to get your hair done. And she says, kind of, why should I? Why should I have to? Which is a good question, you know?
It's because Carla immediately insults her hair.
Are you going to get your hair done for that? Why on earth should I?
Well, at least get the tension on that bun checked. I mean, if that baby goes, we're all dead.
That hardly seems just, coming from a woman whose hair has never seen a greasy pot it couldn't scrub clean.
Watch it, babe.
Ooh, I'm out of here.
Now, now. Girls, there's no reason to insult each other, no matter how on the nose either of you might be.
Some harsh words between the two of them, but Lilith turns to Frasier to ask his opinion. Almost sort of slightly in monologue, slightly to the rest of the gang, he kind of goes, if I tell her that she shouldn't change it, it feels like I don't care, but if I tell her that she should, she'll feel like I don't like her hair. So it feels like he's a bit between a hard place and a rock. There's no right answer.
He almost figures out what the correct answer is, but he sees his foot and he goes, that looks tasty.
You're asking me. Just a second, dear. Uh-oh, I'm in big trouble. If I tell her to change, she'll assume that I'm disappointed by the way she looks. On the other hand, if I say it's fine as it is, she'll think I don't care. You know, Lilith, you should do with those raven tresses whatever pleases you. Because, my angel, if you're happy, I'm happy.
You're chicken.
But happy.
For heaven's sake, take a stand.
Just a second, dear. She's going to the mat on this one.
Why don't you just tell her to get her hair changed?
Well, perhaps you're right. You know, she probably wants to change herself in some way, but doesn't have the confidence to just let go. Lilith, I think you should restyle. You know, tell the truth, there is a part of me that would like to see a little change in your appearance.
Why? Because you've secretly hated the way I've looked all these years and haven't had the guts to tell me?
Just a second, dear. Taxi!
And he runs out the bar, I'm pretty sure, calling a cab.
Yeah, he does. And it's... He was so close to getting it right. He was so close to saying, you know, it's up to you.
But that sets up sort of the B story of this episode. But the A story begins with a birthday, James.
Norm's birthday.
I don't feel like we've ever celebrated Norm's birthday in the bar before.
Oh, we have.
Have we?
Yep.
Not for a while.
Not for a while, correct.
But the gang have sort of all pulled together and they've bought him what Norm wants most in life.
Pint.
Nice beer with a bow on.
He's a simple man. That's a nice gift beer. Lovely. Never look a gift beer in the mouth is what I say.
Sam's done an extra surprise, which is they've got Kevin McHale there. We mentioned him at the beginning of this episode. He's there in the office and he comes out to surprise Norm. Norm says something slightly weird at first.
Well, Sam says, I've got a big gift for you in my office. And then Kevin McHale comes out and Norm is like, Sam, I know where to draw the line. But Kevin McHale is not the present.
No, he is holding a Celtics jacket to gift Norm, which is nice. That's a good gift, isn't it?
It is. Very good gift, yeah.
Because Norm is a long-term Celtics fan. And yeah, it's kind of... It feels like it's his best birthday. He doesn't take the jacket off again since, you know? At least in the end of this episode, he wears it in every scene, I'm pretty sure.
He does. I mean, Christmas has just gone. Did you get a Celtics jersey?
No, I didn't, unfortunately, James. Did you?
No.
Why have we asked this question?
I thought there would be a fun thing to do. You could talk about sports a little. But no, I didn't get a Celtics jersey. Do I have a Red Sox jumper, though?
I got you the scarf for your birthday last year.
You did. And I'm very grateful for that. I was trying to be wholesome and nice. And John was like, no.
Well, I tell you what, in this exchange of you got the Red Sox scarf, we find out that Sam's promised a signed baseball from Wade Boggs in return for Kevin McHale sorting out this jacket. And we get this lovely sort of scene where Sam goes to the side of the bar and Phil goes, how many G's are in Boggs?
Oh, Phil, you scoundrel, forging Wade Boggs' signature.
Yeah, Sam says 2 G's and he goes, that doesn't look right.
It's a simple gag, but it works.
It's good nevertheless.
What has Cliff got Norm for his birthday?
Besides the beer, he gets him. Oh, I can't remember.
He's gotten the gift of not sharing facts.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
They often talk about the gift of gab, but sometimes the gift of lacking gab is also appreciated.
But I tell you what, that promise of not delivering on trivia doesn't last long, because Cliff quickly veers into the road of trivia and starts talking about the amount of bolts that hold the floor down at the Celtic Garden, their sort of home ground.
And it's a strange thing, because it's this type of information where these days you could wonder it and you go, oh, we'll look it up. And then you've got the answer. But not in Cheers. No, they...
Yeah, in Cheers, the deliberation is between 2,860 bolts or 2,880 bolts. And this kind of query, it doesn't get much of an argument between the bar, but it rests on Kevin McHale's mind. What's the most trivial argument you've had in a bar, James?
Most trivial argument?
Yeah.
Probably how you pronounce Pierce Brosnan's name.
What were they saying?
Brosman with an M. And I went, no. And again, there was no reason to do it. Same thing where people said that the Rolling Stones song was Symphony for the Devil. And I'm like, no, that's not right either.
It's Sympathy.
Sympathy for the Devil, yeah. And they thought it was Symphony for the Devil. And I went, well, I know you're wrong. But, yeah. Like, it was more so the fact that they kept saying it wrong, you know. I wasn't adamant enough to argue about it. It just made my eye twitch whenever I heard it the wrong way, you know. So instead of arguing, I just walked away. I went, they're making my blood simmer. And I need to just... I need another pint, you know? Yeah. So not less an argument, more the origins of rage.
Ah, well, you can have many a good conversation in a pub, and I suppose this is maybe not one of them, but it gets a little bit of conversation going around the bolts of the floor. So the gang, I think they feel quite a good sort of friendship with Kevin McHale now. They've met him twice. He's come over for Norm's birthday. He's becoming somewhat of an honorary gang member, I think.
He's one of the guys. Boys.
But they ask him to find out how many bolts there are.
But which, you know, you could think he'd ask someone who works there and would know. But also, surely, in the design plans, you would know, in the construction people would know, but surely once it's been built, all you really need to know is when any specific bolt needs to be replaced, you know?
Yeah.
The basketball court of Theseus.
it's not a particularly interesting fact to know.
I came across a good fact. I think it's a good fact. Half of the Die Hard films are based on books.
Oh, which half?
Die Hard.
Mm-hmm.
Die Hard 2.
Mm-hmm.
And Die Hard 4.
Did you know the first two Jurassic Park films are based on books?
I did, called Jurassic Park and The Lost World.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's by Michael Crichton and Arthur Conan Doyle.
There you go.
Yeah.
Some facts. What were we talking about? There is this good moment when Kevin McHale starts to ponder how many bolts there are, and Carla sort of ushers him out of the building and says, run, Kevin, you've still got time. You've still got time.
It's too late for them, but you still have a chance.
There used to be this great psychiatrist who used to come here. He was well respected, but it's too late for him. And she sort of hurries him out of the building.
I do love that bit.
Yeah, she fears that he's going to become one of them and points at the rest of the bar. And the next scene we get is the rest of the gang watching the basketball game on TV later that day. And I think they say there's a minute left to go, and they're all cheering Kevin McHale on, and he's got the ball, he throws the ball, and he hits a dud. Doesn't bank it. And then it's said in the TV announcement that he appears to be walking along the court with his head down, counting the bolts in the floor. Not the best of gameplay.
Then we have Glenn Ordway trying to interview him. He basically tells Ordway, not now, I'm counting.
And Glenn Ordway, of course, is...
Glenn Ordway.
Glenn Ordway, a real-life man.
Yeah.
A presenter, a media correspondent for the Celtics, I believe.
Yeah. Should we talk about the cast then?
Yeah, now's as good a time as any.
Kevin McHale. This is his second of two appearances. So, spoiler, John, he's not coming back.
Thank God. I don't think you could take another episode.
Who we do get in this episode, though, is Lynn McHale. As Lynn McHale, she has been married to Kevin since 30th of June 1982, and they have five children. And it's because we get a scene in Kevin's house. Philip Pullman as Phil, Paul Wilson as Paul, Cray Pence, Glenn Ordway as Glenn Ordway, the former radio personality and sports commentator, began his career at the small Boston radio station WMLO in 1972. He later became the sports director at WMEX. He became the primary announcer for the Boston Celtics in 1989, a post he held until 1996. Tim Cunningham as Tim, Joseph Gu, Melo Alexandria, Susan Evans, Don Bennett are uncredited as bar patrons.
A lovely cast there. And I tell you what, James, I know we're sort of at a midpoint of this episode.
Yeah.
I'm really enjoying this episode. I think it's got a lot of fun in it.
It does, yes.
And we'll get on to a little bit later, but the Celtic storyline, I feel, is some of like the... If there was ever a Cheers movie,
yep.
Scenes come in later in this episode, I would say, a sort of movie level in scope.
I would agree.
But before we get there, James, Lilith has arrived at Cheers.
Yes, and it's worth pointing out something that happened, which was a great callback, was Woody's trying to play with his camera and he goes, Sam, I can't figure it out. And then he flashes Sam in the eyes.
And blinds him. I thought that was going to be a bigger part of the episode, if I'm honest.
No, but it causes Sam to smash four glasses on the floor. It's just a one bit, but it's a good little callback about third of the episode in.
Woody's camera flash isn't the only thing blinding people, James. Lilith's hair
is... I don't mind it, you know.
I thought there was going to be more said about the similarities it does have to Carla's.
Yeah.
But that didn't seem to come up, really. But she's got like a full perm now.
Yeah.
Some very dense curls.
I'm pretty sure my aunt had the same hairstyle in 1991. Dense curls indeed, yes.
It's a good look, but Frasier can't help but laugh.
I don't mind it, yeah.
I mean, I think it's on a scale of 1 to 10 of how much can you perm, they probably went to like a solid 11.
This perm goes up to 11. Don't even look at it.
They pushed it further than they should have, and they knew what they did.
This perm's going to blow.
Frasier can't help but laugh, which obviously is not Lilith's aim when she got her hair done. And the rest of the bar is sort of, I don't think the rest of the bar particularly laugh, but she's not got the reaction she wants and starts to leave. And Frasier sort of begs her to come back and says he won't laugh, but he can't help himself.
It's a strange thing to laugh at. I mean, it's obviously a wig, isn't it? Behind the scenes wise.
Probably, yeah.
BB put her hair up in that tight bun and then they just put a wig on her.
Yeah, probably a wig, I'd say. But it hasn't went down with Frasier. She's even said, you're hurting my feelings to Frasier.
Bump. Powerful words.
Powerful words, yeah. Especially when you see them written down in the transcript. But we see some few scenes with this story play out because Lilith does come back to the bar and sees Rebecca and asks Rebecca what she thinks. Rebecca says, I think it's nice, you know. She doesn't laugh at her.
She thinks that Lilith had courage to change her look.
That makes Lilith feel a bit better about it. And then Lilith goes to sit down or leaves Rebecca at the bar. And it's revealed that Rebecca has only managed to hold her laughter in because she's got mouse traps on her hands.
They call her Rebecca Mousetrap Hands.
No, the weird thing is, James, I had the same. When I watched it, I went, it's like the Edward Scissorhands, but with mousetraps.
You ever got your hand caught in a mousetrap?
No, I've never. Have you?
Almost. Yeah.
Getting that little piece of cheese?
That's exactly what happened, yeah. I was over at a friend's garage and we were looking for like a tennis ball or a ping pong ball or something. I saw the mousetrap and as a, you know, young, I'd say maybe 12 is how old it was.
What time in the day was it that will let me know how hungry you were?
I want to say 3 p.m.
Okay, post-lunch, pre-dinner.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and I wasn't going to eat the cheese, come on now.
Why are you trying to get the cheese then?
But because curiosity.
Killed the cat.
I went, oh, that's a mousetrap. I wonder if it's open. So I went in and, you know, nudged the cardboard of it. And then I heard the snap thing, but I managed to move my hand away quickly enough, you know? Yeah.
Could have been bad, James.
Just screaming, what happened? The trap got me! But yeah, no, almost. Almost got me, yeah.
I've never succumbed to a mousetrap, and I never will.
It's the same type of thing when I found a lighter in the drawer, and I went, oh, I wonder if that's got any lighter fluid in it. It went, ch-ch-ch-ch. And then on the third, like I thought, by the time I was giving up, it sparked. I went, oh, and threw the lighter away. Basically, you put a trinket in front of me. Eventually, I will be curious to see what it does. So, yes, Lilith leaves, grateful for Rebecca's comfort. Rebecca reveals to the gang that she's been wearing mousetraps on. She gives one to Carla, I believe, but keeps the other mousetrap. Later in the episode, Frasier does come in to apologise.
Yeah, he feels a bit of regret for how he responded to the haircut, especially after he had sort of told her to change her style up. Yeah, he's very apologetic and sincere with that. And she accepts his apology and they sort of make amends, which is nice.
They hug.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see, Frasier mousetrap.
Yeah, it's revealed he's using the same trick where he's got like a duffel coat with deep pockets because he's got mousetraps in on his hands.
I've not seen the play The Mousetrap, but I know it's about a detective and I like to think they're wearing a big duffel coat and got mousetraps on their hands.
That's the whole play, James. You've really sussed it there. Everyone's got their hands in their pockets, but one person has mousetraps on them.
Then that's the twist.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know what they say, don't spoil the ending, and now we have. Sorry, everyone.
I'm surprised you've not seen it. I've seen it. You ever had a bad haircut, James?
Oh, yes. Many times.
I've had a haircut emergency before.
You have, as have I. Yeah.
I think I might have told you about mine, but I'm not sure.
It's when you were shaving your beard or something and you went up your so
normally,
temples.
Not my temples. Sideburns.
Sideburns, that's the word.
Yep, I just slipped and went straight up the temple of my forehead.
I just kept going.
I thought I had it on the right setting to blend into my sideburns, but ended up lopping off like half my sideburn.
Yep.
To above the eye.
Yep, it happens. And
I had to queue up the next day at like a barber's that opened really early. So this was on a Sunday I did this. No barbers are open on Sundays.
It's one of the good things when you work from home, to be honest, because...
Well, this was pre-work from home, and on a Monday morning, I was there, stood in the street, waiting outside a barber's for it to open, in a queue.
Yeah.
And then I had to go straight to work after, to which someone said, oh, that's a fresh trim. And I went, you don't know how fresh it is.
Was it me who said that?
It wasn't.
Well, there you go. What else happens in this episode of Cheers?
Also the question, how many bolts are in that floorboard? So the gang realised that Kevin McHale's been off his game because he is focusing in on the big question of how many bolts are in the floorboards. And he cannot play with this distraction in his mind. And he's going over it. He's had sleepless nights. You mentioned his wife is in this episode. It's because they've got a scene where he's having a sleepless night. And he's like, the gang of Cheers, the gang of Cheers. No, he doesn't actually do that. He's just on the phone with them talking about it. But I like the idea of he's having nightmares about it.
Yeah, and, you know, he does debate about it. And Lynn goes, Kevin, go back to bed. And then pulls the phone cord out. Good on her.
But later that night, he runs to Cheers and he's brought the blueprints to the building with him to try and count the floorboards.
Something interesting about these blueprints?
They're on a date.
What? No.
They're a different building.
They're ahead of date. So the blueprints he has are for the redesign of the Boston Garden, which, history of the Boston Garden here. The original Boston Garden opened in 1928 and closed in 1995. It was demolished in 1998. The new area, TD Garden, which is what I went past while I was over in Boston, broke ground in 1993. So the plans that Kevin McHale brings in are the blueprints for the one which would start being constructed in 1993.
That's a nice fact.
Opened in 1995. And it's what Cliff points out, actually, which is a nice bit of behind the scenes, that when Cliff goes, these are the new blueprints, there were in fact new blueprints of a building.
There you go. The more you know. When he's in Cheers, his wife then appears at Cheers and says, Kevin, you come home now. He's in trouble, that man.
He says, nothing will stop me from finding out this number. Then his wife goes, Kevin.
I mean, kudos to Kevin McHale, because he's come in, and it's very much a similar thing to what Wade Boggs did. They went all in with it. They knew that they were there to have fun, to be the sort of butt of the joke at times, and to just enjoy that. And he does a great job at it.
Yeah. And like, I don't know much about Kevin McHale's personality outside of his character, Kevin McHale in Cheers. You know, I think he's doing quite well, because they've given him quite a significant arc, I guess, and lines to remember, and he's doing a good job.
But he leaves the bar, and the rest of the gang decide they're going to solve this problem for him, so he can play the next day with peace of mind, knowing how many bolts there are. So Cliff, Norm, Sam, and Woody go to the garden.
Carla is concerned because she thinks that the gang have corrupted Kevin to the point that the next thing he'll be obsessed with would be if the Brady Bunch crashes in the Andes, who's going to eat who first? Which leads to a great bar conversation.
It's got to stop. I'm not going to let you screw up his career.
Oh, come on, lighten up, will you? It's just Kevin's getting a little carried away with bolts, that's all.
Yeah, sure, Sammy. Today, it's how many bolts are in the floor. Tomorrow, they'll have a mantra. If the Brady Bunch crashes in the Andes, who's going to eat who first?
Well, they'd probably eat the maid, because she ain't kin.
You know, but if they're smart, they'll ask her first how she should best prepare herself.
I don't really have any stakes in this horse race, if I'm honest.
That's a strange metaphor, but I do have an interesting fact.
Yeah?
The Brady Bunch movie was released in 1995, and Shelley Long played Carol.
Oh, okay. That is an interesting fact, James.
She reprised her role in a very Brady sequel. A modest success, and a 2002 TV film sequel, The Brady Bunch in the White House.
So if the Brady Bunch exists as a program in Cheers, but Shirley Long also then became one of the characters and cast of The Brady Bunch, what does that mean, James?
It means the whole five characters in search of an author type deal, you know, that in one iteration, it's a book, but in another iteration, it's a reality. Yeah? See what I mean?
Nope, but cool.
In one form of reality, it's fiction that someone has created, but in another reality, that piece of work is reality. So Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings could exist somewhere in the multiverse solely because it was created by someone. Now, I'm not going to claim that that is true, but that's the theory.
I think we're starting to understand why this snow globe exploded.
Yes, it did. So they do arrive at the garden, the guys.
And this is where I say it gets cinematic, because what a great set. I mean, it's not a set, it is the garden.
The attention to detail. But Norm gives a great speech about what it means to him to be there.
Yeah, and it's considering it's just off the back of his birthday as a character as well, he's very much enjoying his birthday week. And he's got, like I say, he doesn't take that jacket off for the whole episode. But as you say, the speech that he gives about the meaning of being in that space and what it means to him. Yeah, it's great.
So Woody asks, where's the ice? Where's the ice at?
And luckily, Cliff has brought his Swiss Army knife, which in the bar we get some lovely sort of misconceptions about what a Swiss Army knife is. Or at least I assume it is. Cliff says that every member of the Swiss Army carries one.
I think that's true.
Is it true?
I think that's true, but his his follower comment, that's why nobody messes with Switzerland.
Oh, I didn't. I just thought Swiss Army knife was just a thing. I don't check Cliff's facts. I just make a judgment on them.
Here we go. Victory Knox, the developers of the Swiss Army knife, proved to be the best solution for the Swiss Army and was awarded the exclusive contract as the official provider. Soldier standard issue Swiss Army knife is the actual tool carried by today's Swiss Army.
Oh, I presumed Cliff was making stuff up, but he was right. Do you have a Swiss Army knife, James?
No, but my dad's got a pocket knife, not an official Swiss Army knife. Makes it sound like he's got a switchblade. No, he's got, you know, a little fallen tool. But yeah, no, a Swiss Army knife is a specific design with specific tools.
Either way, Woody uses it to take up a floorboard to try and see some ice underneath, exposing some plywood.
Lovely. at this point, what I do like is when you hear the being lifted, you hear metal drop.
Mm.
It's just a nice touch.
So whilst they're sort of counting the bolts to try and figure this out for Kevin, Woody lifts up it up and they all go and sort of have a little look at what's underneath the floorboards. And as they're doing that, they hear some security guards coming over and they quickly run. Woody does his best to put down the floorboarding and put the bolts back in. And they sort of sprint away. And Norm says, it's been the best birthday ever. He says they got to sneak around at the garden. He got a jacket from Kevin McHale. He got to look at the plywood under the floor. And now they're getting chased off by security guards.
He got to play very brief basketball in the garden.
Oh, that was a good moment as well. He'd brought a basketball with him, which he hadn't used since he was last at the gym.
Which was easily a decade ago.
That was a great visual gag of him about to dribble the ball, but the ball just pancakes, really, doesn't it?
Yeah. We have talked a bit about playing basketball. We've never actually done so, but we should.
Oh, we should.
They think they've got their answer, or at least Sam pretends they have an answer, and he's told Kevin, and they think it's all solved now.
Well, Sam just makes up a number, doesn't he?
Yeah, easy does.
But so there's sort of, we feel like we're coming to the end of the episode, and Woody comes over and says, hey, you guys, Sam, what would you do if you knew, hypothetically, you took up some floorboards, say, at the garden, and maybe you didn't put the bolts back in?
Yep.
It's not the best of sort of...
Transparent, isn't he?
Really? He's pretty transparent with it. And it's revealed that Woody didn't have time to put all the bolts back in the floorboards. So there are some loose boards. Kevin McHale is... as we speak, on the court, playing a game of basketball, and they say, you know, what are the odds of anyone standing on that precise flooring? It'll be fine. They say there's people who are paid to survey the room before a game. They'll have caught it and put some new bolts in.
Interestingly, there's this clip I've seen of Steph Curry dribbling a basketball, and he's just dribbling along, but one of his bounces, it goes way off askew. So what he does is he stops, and he just bounces the ball around a certain area. And at one point, he finds where it goes askew, and he calls someone over, and he goes, this floorboard is loose.
Yeah, he finds the dead spot. I've seen that video as well.
It's quite good, yeah.
What are the odds?
What are the odds? I'll tell you, the odds are less than Kevin McHale tripping on a loose floorboard.
Yeah, Kevin McHale is, of course, he is the rickety cricket of cheers, and he slips on the floorboard and does himself in.
To our... non-Cockney listeners. It means he's injured himself.
It made sense, didn't it?
It does. Yeah. It made sense. It was just a very colloquial expression.
The gang feel like they need to go and apologize to him. And they go to the garden once again and go to the changing rooms there and find him with his foot bandaged up. And they say...
an ice bath or something as well.
Yeah. And they all feel like a sort of weight of responsibility. And they pass this along to each other where Norm says, if it wasn't my birthday kind of idea, Sam says, if it wasn't for me, if Cliff says it wasn't for him bringing the Swiss Army knife, then Woody says, if it wasn't for him not putting the floor down. And they all go, So they go over to Kevin McHale and kind of tell Woody to admit what he's done.
And Kevin gets initially annoyed, but he goes, yeah, you know, it's fine. Like, you know, if you found him, the number of floorboards, don't worry about it. And they didn't.
No, Sam announces that he just made it up. And Kevin goes, but I got a game tomorrow. And then our last shot of the episode is all of them on the court, counting all of the bolts in the flooring. This is a great shot because it's sort of done extremely wide, give an idea of the scale. They're going to do the whole room. It's basically like... it's the equivalent of cutting grass with some little scissors.
Nail clippers.
Yeah.
Yep. Norm's got like a little ticker tape thing and they lose count at 1,217. So that gives you an idea of... fun fact. The credits are rolling, by the way. That's not the fact. But the Celtics invited the cast to a game at Boston Garden after this episode aired. The game was against the Pistons, but the cast was not seated together. And apparently there's a photo, a wide shot of the crowd, and you could see members of the Cheers cast around. But I've had a look for it and couldn't find it. So if anyone has that, post it on our social media for us to have a look at.
That feels like trivia time, James.
thanks, Cliff. Yeah, same about Kevin, isn't it? He'll be all right. I don't think he'll come back to the bar after you've done him in. Well, on your way, Cliff.
As usual, before we open our letters, we have to give a shout out to our norms on Patreon. So this goes out to Treb Curry. If you want that special norm treatment, then check out our Patreon page for that and so much more.
Based on a norm having a birthday episode way back in season 3, how old is he in this season 10 episode?
Oh, 42.
Very close, 43.
Ah. Yeah. That's annoyingly close, isn't it?
Yeah.
In this episode, James, the big thing was how many bolts are in the flooring? How many bolts are in the flooring, James?
In actuality. So I tried to look this up. The only thing I could find was that there were 247 panels in the Celtics floor held down by 988 bolts. However, I don't know if this is accurate because it said, according to an internet search...
I found the source of that search, James.
Oh.
This is in the Boston Celtics Virtual Vault, which is their official online vault of information. But it says not every piece of the Boston Garden was shiny and polished. So this fact actually is the underflooring. This is the plywood flooring underneath.
Oh.
So I don't actually have the top layer flooring, but there is in fact 988 bolts and the underflooring.
Ah.
Minus four, because Woody took four.
I am, and I'd imagine that they are larger pieces of wood, so therefore less bolts.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go.
There you go.
What is more special to Norm than a free beer?
Oh, two free beers?
No. It is beer related.
A keg and a bathtub? A keg and something. A keg and a straw?
Oh, you're very... A keg and a snorkel.
You put the two things I said together, that's the same. In this episode, James, as part of the fight about who knows how many bolts are in there, Norm says he knows someone from the Bull Gang, which is the people who lay the flooring at the garden.
Mm-hmm.
How long did it take the Bull Gang to lay the floor, on average?
6 weeks?
No. About 2.5 hours to put all the flooring down.
Oh, yeah, I don't know what I was thinking. I was guessing. I was very wrong on that one. What is the score for the Celtics game halfway through the episode? What's the final score?
Oh, I don't know.
Want to take a guess?
Yeah. I will. Don't rush me. No, I'm not going to guess, James.
Okay.
You can't make me.
Okay, then. It's Cleveland 102, Boston 100.
Close game.
What we got here, John? This isn't a question.
It's a message from our sponsor, James.
It is, yes. Now, a lot of you have been, asking how we make our podcasts, and we use Zencastr, don't we, John?
It's been our platform of choice for recording podcasts for nearly 5 years now.
Yeah, something like that. We didn't have it to start with, but once we found it, it was a very useful tool for us. It has its own internal audio processing, and it's proven, very useful, very effective, and very user-friendly as well.
I tell you what I'd say, James. I'd say anyone could use Zencastr to start a podcast. So if, like the gang at Cheers, you're full of facts, why not start your own podcast using Zencastr today?
Yes, go to zencastr.com/pricing and use the code NORM. We don't need to tell you how to spell that. And you'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. We want you to have the same easy experiences we do for all our podcasting and content needs, because it's time for you to share your story. That's last call. What do you think we should have?
I'm thinking a lovely beer with a nice bow on it to celebrate Norm's birthday.
That sounds delightful. I think you could have a beer board, couldn't you?
A beer board? Yeah, we could do.
You know, where you have like three different beers in a nice little panel board there?
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
But how many bolts are on that board? That's what I need to know.
Oh, boltless. We're coming up to the end of the year now. So, you know, we hope that you have a good New Year's party. We hope that, you have as much fun as Norm has on his birthdays. And we'll see you in the new year.
Yeah, this has been Where Nobody Knows Your Name. It's, I can't believe we're already like a third of the way, or over a quarter of the way through season 10 already, James. But this has been Where Have All the Floorboards Gone? Potentially already my top five at the end of the season, James.
Potentially. Mm-hmm.
But as you say, everyone out there, have a lovely New Year's. This has been us signing off for 2023. We'll be back in the new year with season 10, episode 9.